When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time with this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alva, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, love the lies. Feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Are at East River 9. John and Lance just finished up, and we'll take you till noon. It'll be a little different today because we'll be here till noon, and then Jeremy and Joe get here at 3 to take you to 6. But, you know, what happened yesterday with the Astros, if you missed it, they fired 5 people. Some people you probably heard of, like Alex Cintron and Snitker. Other guys maybe you didn't know existed, like Jeremiah Rando and Andrew Ball, but not just because it was the Astros, but what happened was inevitable. Some people had to pay for what had been some leakage. There's been leakage in talent leaving the organization and also just wins. Some people had to pay the price, and when we found out that Espada and Dana Brown were staying, as they say, bleep rolls downhill, so the bleep rolled down to these guys. And there's some evidence to suggest that some guys deserve it. I don't know what Andrew Ball does. So he is over medical. Actually, you know what? Now that I look at it, he's over medical player development. So that would explain why he's going, considering what has happened over the last couple years. Cintron hitting coach, we can see that on a day-to-day basis. Things weren't looking great with the lineup, even when they were fully healthy. Now, I can't put a lot on him for all the injuries and how the lineup performed when you had guys like Melton when he was here. And Trammell, all those guys, I don't really throw on Cintron's docket. But even when the guys were at their best as far as health-wise, the lineup didn't live up to expectations. Too many games where they let their pitchers down. A pitching staff that got hit with injuries like a lot of baseball, but the Astros felt particularly were hampered by major arm injuries. So your head trainer has to go. The guy over medical player development has to go, and your two hitting coaches have to go. Why the catching coach had to go, I guess that's maybe a Yiner thing. The Astros, when Yiner's behind the plate, weren't particularly good defensively. He had his moments later in the year, but Yiner is not a positive defensively, and of course you want that bat in the lineup. So maybe internal improvement from him with a different coach will lead to better success. But so 5 guys are out. And I saw from multiple reports that they're not done yet. This is just the start. These are the names that maybe they know now. But there may be a complete flushing of staff members as they try to get back to being a contender. And this is what happens at the end of runs. When you're trying to elongate them and you can't switch out the entire roster and you see performances dip, you start to pick at staff. And anyone who has rooted on a college football team knows a head coach plus an AD will fire a coordinator, will fire a position coach because he can't recruit. It all happens that way until eventually the head man goes. So right now with Espada and Dana Brown still under contract for a year, some guys had to go. And this is where it's happening. We're at the peak of the hiring-firing process where everyone can maybe, if they feel these firings are justified, be excited about what's next. But that's the biggest thing. What's next? Who do the Astros hire? If these coaches were the problem, then you have to answer with guys who or respond with guys that are answers to your problems. So we will see as the offseason moves on for the Astros who they decide to replace these guys with. But a lot of changes for the organization. Of course, if you've been keeping track, you know that they have plenty of guys who they have to decide whether they're going to tender and keep, tender and trade, or how much arbitration will play a part in what this roster looks like coming up. But when you win as many division titles in a row as the Astros have, make as many postseason runs as they've had, and now you go and watch the diminishing returns from making the World Series to making the ALCS, actually winning the World Series to making the ALCS, then losing in a wild card round to not even making the playoffs. People got to pay for it, and the names mentioned are the guys who have to pay for it. I think the hitting coaches are the ones that probably make the fans feel the best. That's the ones you can point to and go, they're the issue. Are the players fragile? Because we talk about injury-prone guys all the time, and we don't put a lot of blame on the medical staff for that, but I think we've all noticed the return-to-play process has been one that hasn't been great. The ones that stand out most are the likes of Kyle Tucker last year and certainly Yordan this year. Those are guys who it felt like were just misdiagnosed, where you couldn't do the basics to find out what was wrong with these guys. Maybe the Astros are being a little secretive of Kyle Tucker. For what reason, I don't know. He missed the time that he missed. Being secretive or not wasn't going to change things, but we know coaching staffs, organizations across sports love to hide facts. So maybe that's what the Astros are doing. The Yordan thing, I don't know what the explanation for it. And, of course, we always forget about Jake Myers, who was out there dressed and ready to go and couldn't make it to the first pitch before he had to get carted off back behind the outfield fence. So the guys paid for what we saw, and now the Astros have to figure out who the right guys are to replace them. So I imagine that'll be a Dana Brown thing and a Jim Crane thing. And Jim Crane's going to, I don't know if you want to use the word credit, but he's going. A lot of these firings are going to be attributed to him. And I'm sure he has his finger on the pulse of the team, but I do wonder who his advisors are and who he conferred with to figure out these guys primarily were responsible for what happened and they had to leave. So I'm sure as the reporting continues, we'll find out who Jim Crane leaned on to make these decisions. But yeah, I'm sure the head man had his thoughts and had his opinion, but I don't think he operates independently. They're his advisors for a reason. And there was the Bagwell, Biggio, Reggie Jackson, Dana Brown group that has been a lesson since Reggie Jackson no longer has the same type of say. But here we are, a lot of moves made, and now it'll be on Dana Brown. We had a caller earlier, Spencer, talk about now it's time for Dana Brown to be a GM. We've gone over quite a bit how the trades at the deadline worked out or didn't work out. Like the Correa thing, nothing but positives to say about that. Even you go back to the offseason when he traded Kyle Tucker away and got what he got. Cam Smith had his ups and downs. We'll see if he's the everyday right fielder going into next season. The Astros have some options there. And, of course, we didn't get the full freight of Wesneski or Paredes because they both got hurt in substantial ways. So, but on its face, that trade looks like a good one for the Astros. Hope Wesneski's back at some point next season. Of course, Paredes was already back, maybe not at full strength. So that was an acquisition that made a lot of sense and worked out when he was actually on the field. So Dana Brown has made trades that worked. The Jesus Sanchez thing, the Marlins fans could have told you that what we got out of him was to be expected. He'll smile. He always has a smile on his face, but he will be someone who butchers balls in the outfield and isn't that great of a base runner either. And then we didn't even get the hitting when it mattered most. Maybe partly why Cintron is gone. So the bloodletting, it's begun. I don't think it's over for the Astros. We will just see how far they go to try to get back on track. So we'll continue to talk Astros. The number is 713-780-3776. If you want to get in on it, if you agree, or maybe you had never heard of these guys and you want to talk about that too, we welcome you. It's me and AJ till noon. We'll get to what happened last night in the NFL. And AJ, as a Cowboy fan, probably enjoyed the Eagles. And the Eagles are messy, man. Like, it's apparently now an every other year thing. You win the Super Bowl when everyone was wondering whether Nick Sirianni would make it through the season. Certainly did. Best team in football last year. Came in with people thinking that same way this year. And after starting 4-0, things have turned. And if, to be honest with you, if you look at how that Rams game went, the Eagles could very well, maybe should be, 3-3. I don't know how many times you block multiple field goals that let you win a game in the NFL. Maybe once every 5 years a team does that, maybe even less frequent than that. So the Eagles probably should have bigger problems than they do. So we'll get into what happened last night, and we'll hear from A.J. Brown, because some of the reporting was about the Eagles' best offensive players having a meeting to try to figure out what the problem was. A.J. Brown wouldn't confirm that there was a meeting, so we'll hear from him on that. We'll get into the college football weekend, too. A lot of games, with the big games, too. The Aggies host Florida. We know the Longhorns got the Red River Shootout with Oklahoma. And USC's got a big game. Big game for Lincoln Riley. They got Michigan. And Lincoln Riley, after losing to Illinois, needs that Michigan game. So we'll get to that and of course, the rest of the NFL weekend. So 713-780-3776 is the number, as we are out at East River 9. We'll be back. But first, I want to talk to you about Monument Chevrolet. They've been in business for over half a century. Over 50 years, and that's true, but I feel like half a century even hits stronger than that. They've been in business a very long time, getting people great cars at great prices. Just check out the entire inventory at monumentchevrolet.com. And I want to let you know, if you're looking for a truck, they have Extended Truck Month. It goes beyond the end of September and into October. And the Silverado 1500 is the vehicle of the week. Because it's truck month, you get a great deal on the Silverado 1500 right now. Check out what type of trim level you want at monumentchevrolet.com, and then head on out there. They're in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. So once you head on out there, you're going to meet great salespeople who understand the car buying process can be a little tricky for people, even if you have done it multiple times or it's your first time. So they're not going to rush you. They're not going to push you, but they also understand you may not want to be out on the lot for very long. So they're going to make sure they get you into the right car for you at the right pace for you. So find the great prices at Monument Chevrolet. Head on out there. They're in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And the prices don't change. No hidden fees, no upcharges. What you see on the website is what you get once you see them in person. Meet the great salespeople, meet the great finance people, and get the great car for you, whether it be pre-owned or new. That's monumentchevrolet.com. And as always, remember this: Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
That's the voice of Michael Carroll. He will not be joining us today at 11:30. He has some time off. So if you were thinking about saving your TV and movie questions, or just even a call for Michael Carroll, don't. He won't be here for that. So if you'd rather, or at least if you want to talk about something else, you can call in 713-780-3776. We'll take your TV and movie questions as well. I saw the trailer for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I also saw the trailer for The Witcher 4, or excuse me, Season 4. One of them is good, the other is not. You probably can guess which one's not, but the one with the Hemsworth in it, or at least the other Hemsworth in it, is the trailer that's not good. I don't know, man. I think I'm going to miss Henry Cavill playing the Witcher. It feels like a lot, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But as far as the game last night, the football game, Giants beat the Eagles, and some of the news coming out of it, at least a big part of the story, was Brian Daboll losing it, or at least partly losing it, because he wanted his starting quarterback back in the game. He had a conversation, let's put it that way, a conversation with one of the doctors asking what was up with Jackson Dart, when can he get back in the game. Maybe partly because of that, or partly because the NFL saw Jackson Dart holding his head at one point immediately after getting hit and then coming out and playing again. They are going to investigate all of that, all of the goings on there. So while the Giants had a big day in the standalone game. Now they have to answer questions about their handling of a potential concussion with their starting quarterback. So we'll see what the fallout is there. The NFL, I think the last time they had something like this happen where the team in question had to answer things about their protocol, maybe back in 2022 with Tua, when he played Buffalo and then he had the issue going into the Cincinnati game where it was clear he had a concussion because he had to be like carted off the field in Cincinnati. So I don't remember the last time an NFL team in a primetime setting had something like that happen where there are questions about their handling. So the Giants will have to answer those questions. But as far as the game itself, it was back and forth early, and then the Giants took control and never looked back. So the Giants are now 2-4. They've won two out of the three Jackson Dart starts now. They beat the Chargers in his first start, lost to the Saints after being up early in his start on Sunday, and now they beat the Eagles. So to the Eagles, which I actually think is a bigger story, the Giants are a nice story, the Cam Scadabo, Jackson Dart of it all, the fact that those two guys are entertaining to watch, that's fine, but I don't take the Giants seriously, at least this season. As far as the Eagles are concerned, thought to be the clear front runner in the NFC, maybe alongside Detroit, to start the season, and as I said going into the break, this team should be 3-3, and if Baker doesn't throw a pick late in the red zone, who knows how the Tampa Bay game goes, but this Eagles team, it's more certainly feels more like the 2023 version of them late in the season than the one that kind of ran through everyone in 2024. All of a sudden, the NFC East feels quite a bit open. We know the Cowboys can put up points. Can they stop anyone will be the question for them as they move along, but Dak's playing great. The Commanders have Jaden Daniels back, and that's a division that maybe should be paid attention to and not just be handed over to the Eagles because they got problems on offense. Look, Lane Johnson said he hopes that the offense becomes less predictable. I don't know if you want to call that a shot at Kevin Petullo, the first year OC, but it's a conversation for the stars of the team, at least the skill position guys beyond Lane Johnson, because apparently, Jalen Hurts and Saquon and A.J. Brown had a meeting. At least that's what it was called. But when asked about said meeting after the game, A.J. Brown had a different remembrance of it. Here's A.J. Brown when reporters got to him after the game.
What was behind that?
I don't recall the meeting.
Oh, okay. The meeting never happened.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Those guys said it did happen.
Oh, you didn't talk to them.
You weren't in the meeting?
I don't recall.
Or you don't want to just talk?
I don't recall.
A.J. Brown sounded like he on a stand or in a Senate hearing. I don't recall. I don't know why it's such a serious thing. Maybe he doesn't want it classified as a meeting, or maybe he doesn't want to give more air to the conversation, period. But this is a man who showed he wasn't that thrilled when they're in the middle of winning a Super Bowl, so I can't say I'm surprised by what's going on. Look, he had a nice game, 6 catches for 80 yards. He only caught 1 touchdown this year. The touchdown went to Dallas Goedert. Of course, the Eagles pulled out 4 straight tush pushes to get in the end zone, and I think Micah Parsons, like he watches football certainly when he gets a chance. Most of the time, he can't because he's playing. But
and he talks a lot.
Yes, he does talk. He does want to be heard. That's a resident Cowboy fan, AJ, chiming in. But he knows he's at least heard bits and pieces of the Micah Parsons podcast when he's a Cowboy. And Micah likes to let his opinion be known. And he said, "This isn't football." I think that was in reference to the tush push stuff. I saw the tweet come across my timeline later because I wasn't watching the game live. I watched it. I caught up with it later. I think he did say this isn't football, and I think that was in reference to the tush push. And when it happens 4 times in a row, I can't really disagree. No one really wants to see it. It came to a vote this pass off season. I imagine it will again if they break that out 4 straight plays again at some point. I think people are just going to say, all right, enough. But it's not great for the TV product. There's no one questioning its effectiveness. But as far as the TV product, it's not good for anyone unless you're an Eagles fan. And it wasn't enough last night. Jalen Hurts threw a bad pick as the Eagles are trying to stay in the game. I think it was 27-17. They're in the red zone. He was inside on a speed out. Cordell Flott picked it off, ran it back deep into Eagles territory. That was the finishing touches. Eventually the Giants punched it in for a touchdown. So the Giants 2-4, got a big win, and it was a lot of people excited to watch Jackson Dart and Cam Scatabo be their authentic selves, I'll say, after the game. We got a call. Let's get to Pena here before we go to break. Pena wants to talk about basketball and a TV show, which we welcome. What's up, Pena?
Hey, what's up, Dale? So yesterday I saw on X that Asia Wilson is the first player in basketball history to hit over a couple. I don't know if I got ball sack or not. Have you seen the Ed Gein show? Pretty weird and creepy, especially his voice. Kind of sounds like Winnie the Pooh. Thank you. Have a great day.
I got the Ed Gein show on my to watch list. I haven't got to it yet, but I'm watching that one. I didn't watch the Jeffrey Dahmer one, but I like Charlie Hunnam. At least I did in the episodes. I didn't watch a lot of Sons of Anarchy, but I saw enough, and I like him as an actor, so I'll watch it. I didn't catch this first thing other than Asia Wilson. I know she hit the game winner against the Mercury in Game 3, so the Aces are a game away from sweeping and winning the finals. I don't know what else he said, so I didn't catch it, but I do know that she went for 34, 14, and 4 in a Game 3 win. So, best player in the league, no doubt, and she's about to go win herself another title. All right, we'll go to break with that. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776. We are out at East River 9. The bar is open. We've got Skyler here with our promo material. If you want a T-shirt, we got a lot of them if you want one. If you want to join us out here, we had a couple people get here early. Now that the bar is open and the kitchen is open, you can eat either before or after your round of golf. They got pickleball. They got the driving range. They got it all out here for you if you just want to spend a couple hours out here enjoying the good weather. Sun's up, feeling pretty good out, looking pretty good out there, and also the golf that you can play. So we'll be back. It'll be me and AJ till noon. We will get into some college football stuff. And, you know, it's fun to be hypercritical of the NFL weekend, particularly the teams that are playing when your team isn't. You're 2-3. You wish it was better, but no stress this weekend. You can just watch some games. So we'll talk about the games this weekend in college and in college and the NFL when we get back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So Texans are on a bye. They'll get back at it next Monday, or at least 2 Mondays from today, against the Seahawks. So a real test for that team. The Seahawks got the Jags this Sunday. Probably, if not the best game, certainly one of the, maybe top three game of the weekend. Seattle coming off a last-second loss to the Bucks. They got to go to the 4-1 Jags. So while they are the Texans' next opponent, they can do us a favor by beating the Jags in a game to at least bring the Jags back closer to the pack. The Colts have the Cardinals. That feels like the Colts are going to be 5-1 the next time the Texans step on the field, and maybe 6-1. I don't know if the Colts have a bye. I don't know if they have a bye next week, but at least 5-1 the next time the Texans step on the field. But so with the Texans not playing, we talked about this yesterday, it opens up this Sunday for what to watch. AJ's fine, because his Cowboys are playing the Panthers in the early window. And so we'll get that one here in town, and we'll also get Browns Steelers. So if you're not a Cowboy fan, it's not a great week. Not a great week. Sean and I talked about it yesterday. We're sticking with red zone. I imagine, AJ, you are locked in. And after the Eagles lost, maybe you always thought this way, but do you think this division, the NFC East, is something the Cowboys can take?
I've been saying it for a while now. There hasn't been a repeat division champion since 2004, so it's struck again.
But the Cowboys winning it, because the Commanders could have been the team who won it, because Eagles won it last year. But you think, after watching, let's say, obviously the first four games of the season, actually first five games of the season, now you're going into week six, watching how the division has played out so far, everyone felt like it was Eagles and Commanders. You watching it? You think it's a three team race?
Yeah, I think it's wide open, honestly. And we're about to see in week seven what's about to happen to the Commanders too. I mean, the only hesitation I have about the Cowboys is their defense. It's terrible, but the offense is lethal, like super lethal.
Yeah, it's hard to back a team who's this bad defensively and think they can do anything serious in a division.
They can only get better though, I guess.
The Ravens are the mark for how bad it can get, and you're not there yet. So, yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be as bad as the Ravens are this year. So, while the Cowboys Panthers isn't a game to look forward to, but that's just another look at how wide open the league is. I'm trying to think of who I think is now. Of course, teams evolve and change, and who knows what it'll be like 4 weeks from now. But if I look at the entirety of the NFL. I guess it's the Lions for me, because as long as they're healthy, stay healthy enough defensively, that they can be average to above average. That offense is so good that they're well on their way to with the Eagles kind of falling apart the last couple weeks, being a number one seed again. And you think back to Week One against the Packers, everyone felt like, oh, the Packers with Micah Parsons has changed the math in that division. But of course, the Packers have looked mortal since. And the Lions haven't. They went into Baltimore. Now, putting up points in Baltimore isn't really a challenge anymore, but that they did still have Lamar, and they outscored Lamar. They do have the Chiefs. So if you want to, you throw the Chiefs and Lions in as another one of the big games as far as maybe getting some answers about some teams in the league, and that's the Sunday night game. So we got a pretty good one, and the Chiefs got a real shot to fall to 2-4. Now, they put up a lot of yards against the Jags, but we saw the Mahomes pick kind of change the complexion of the game. They were likely going to be 21-7. It turns into 14-14, and that was even after they were up 14-0. So the Chiefs, certainly, we know they're vulnerable. If the Lions can send them to 2-4 and go to 5-1, you might just say the Lions are the best team in football, alongside the Colts, who can get to 5-1. Buffalo, we saw them drop one on last Sunday night, and they got to go into Atlanta. I think Buffalo's fine. It's a good win for the Patriots, but I think I put Buffalo at the top of the AFC as it stands right now. I don't believe in the Jags. I saw them play the Texans, and I saw how easily that game could have gone the other way, and that's kind of how the Jags season has been outside of blowing out the Panthers early. You look at all their wins, and it's a lot of them living off creating turnovers, and look, that's great. I think they have 10 interceptions so far this year, but they are very turnover dependent, and if teams can take care of the ball against the Jags, I'm not afraid of that defense at all. And I think they're one of those teams who may start the season hot and kind of fall by the wayside, but you credit them, and they got a challenge this weekend against the Seahawks. So there are, if you actually look at the schedule, you can find some games. Hell, Tampa's playing San Francisco. There are 2-4-1 teams. So the schedule's not bad this weekend. It's just that the team in town won't be playing. Just gives us an opportunity to look across the rest of the league and maybe compare. Because if you think back to, what was it, week one? I can't remember the exact game, but it was Ravens Bills Sunday night. It was the last game of Sunday, and all the talk was the Texans were playing a different style of football, like not even playing the same sport. When we comped them to the Bills and the Ravens, little did we know that the Ravens have an all time bad defense, and making a comp towards them didn't mean very much at the time. So and that was really 4 or 5 weeks ago. So things have changed, and we know the Texans are at least numbers-wise getting better. We talked all through the week about how the context of their opponent may be determining quite a bit, but they'll get a chance to answer some of those questions next week against the Seahawks. As far as the college football slate, certainly this show and the morning show has talked a lot of Texas OU. We haven't focused that much on A&M and Florida. This is a tricky one for A&M. In fact, A&M fans are talking about the Auburn game as the one where they just expected them, after beating Notre Dame, to lay an egg. Florida is one of those teams who, if you certainly is by the preseason rankings, they were a top 15 team in the country, and they finally played like one last week at the expense of Texas. So while A&M has looked good at home, their defense has played really well at home. You have to ask, is DJ Lagway back to his preseason status as one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC, or is he a guy who just had a good day? And that'll be the question. Florida's offensive line, outside of how they got beat up by Miami, is considered a pretty good offensive line. So can the Aggies get after DJ Lagway? He has, because of what happened against LSU, been much safer with the football. And if you look at the Miami game, maybe to his detriment. But he felt confident going against Texas. Dallas Wilson's a guy to take a look at. He's the five-star freshman who made his first appearance and came on and scored a couple touchdowns. He bullied a couple Texas DBs. Just looked like the best player on the field for several plays. So that'll be something for A&M to contend with. Florida's defense is good. A&M can put up points. They've got Craver and Concepcion, but if we just go by roster and how the teams play, this is the best defense that A&M has played. So Marcel Reed, I don't know that he'll be able. I don't know if he'll be picking apart Florida on longer drives. The Aggies have proven to be explosive. I think that's how, if they're going to score, they're going to do it. Now Florida's defense, and this was a banged up defense, could be run on when they went down to Miami, physically beat on, and so that could be a way for A&M to open up the passing game by using their backs. Not sure the status of Le'Veon Moss. I know I think he got banged up last week against Mississippi State. Reuben Owens came in and he did a good job. And it's good to see that Bryce Anderson is back. He was the kid who had to be carted off the field against Notre Dame. It was scary. He was down on the field a pretty long time. But he seems to be recovering pretty well. And that's good news to see that it looks like there are no long-term issues with him as far as forget about not playing football anymore, but that looked like one of those things where we're worried about if he's going to have the same quality of life as he had entering the game. But it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. So that's good news, and to see him working his way back just to being a regular college student again. So that's good to see. So that one is – so A&M, Florida is one. And if you go across the schedule, Alabama, Missouri is one to look at as well. Missouri been off the radar all year long. They beat Kansas, and that was a good game against a pretty good opponent. But Alabama's coming to town. Alabama's had a couple weeks in a row of this now, of teams wanting to establish themselves as a real contender. They took care of Vanderbilt. They forced the two Diego Pavia red zone turnovers, and that got their defense going, because at that time. Vanderbilt was going up and down the field. They had an explosive run for a touchdown on their first drive, and then their second drive was one where they were working their way down the field against Alabama. But Alabama got the running game going after that turnover, and Ty Simpson's probably the best player a lot of us haven't heard of as far as on the national scale. He's just a guy that waited his turn, and now all of a sudden we're talking co-leader or actual leader in the Heisman conversation. So if you're looking for good quarterback play, Ty Simpson is probably your choice. And he's going against a Missouri team who's got Bo Prabula, who was the transfer from Penn State. So that's a good quarterback matchup. Prabula does a little differently. He's going to use his legs a bit more. But that one's in Columbia, and that's early. So if you're looking to get your weekend going tomorrow. That one's early. And then you've also got Ohio State, Illinois. Ohio State, number one team in the country. They've looked at so far. This is their first ranked opponent, and they go on the road. Illinois, if we remember, got destroyed by Indiana a couple weeks ago, just got blown out in Bloomington, but then had the win against USC, where that game was closer than it should have been. Illinois had a couple of inside the 10-yard line turnovers, like almost practically at the goal line. They fumbled a couple of times, or they could have put USC away. So they can move the football a little bit. Ohio State, they aren't as potent offensively as they have been in the past, but that defense is still that defense. And so it'll be a test. That game I could see being maybe not low scoring, but we're probably talking in the 20s. A game where Ohio State maybe snuffs out Illinois and maybe wins it like 28-14, something like that. So that's an early one, too. That's the big new kickoff game with Fox. And I mentioned before we went to break that if we're talking about tenure-defining games, the USC-Michigan game is one for Lincoln Riley. Michigan's coming there, top 15 team in the country. Their only loss is at Oklahoma. USC's only loss is to that Illinois team. And this is a game they got to have. They're favored. Their defense got physically beat up last year. If you remember that game, it was a lot of explosive runs by Michigan. So maybe I will actually pull back on physically beat up. It's just that that when Michigan hit a crease, it was for not just 20. It was like for 40 yards and long touchdown runs. And we'll see if USC has assured that up. They didn't look like a stout defensive team against Illinois. But this one's at home, coming off a bye. If you're a former Big 12 fan, maybe because Oklahoma's now in the SEC or Texas is now in the SEC, if you don't like Lincoln Riley, this is the game that may decide his tenure. They're paying him a lot of money, but USC, despite their history, has shown a lack of commitment to football up until they signed Lincoln Riley and convinced him to leave OU. They've invested a lot of money in him and in this program, and if he doesn't win, and now they're out of the Big Ten title race and certainly out of the national championship picture, while I don't think it'll be loud, it's not Billy Napier loud as far as the drum beat to get him out of there, a loss of Michigan when you're favored at home could be the one where even some of his biggest supporters say, all right, we've seen enough. So that'll be one to take a look at, and that's at night. It'll be 6:30 our time on NBC. And maybe the final one we'll take a look at before we go to break is Indiana-Oregon. That's when we talk about highest-ranked teams going against each other. That's the one. Indiana, we know from last year, that's a team who made the playoff, but no one believed in them because they didn't beat anyone of consequence. And when they finally saw someone in the playoff, they got handled by Notre Dame. I mentioned they beat up on Illinois, so that was a top 25 win for them. Now they got a chance to really establish themselves. I mentioned Ty Simpson. Francisco Mendoza is another quarterback to take a look at. If you're just looking to see who's going to be a quarterback that might be someone on the next level that could get drafted pretty high, he's a transfer from Cal, and Indiana, after losing Curtis Rourke to graduation, went out and got him, and he's been really good. 16 touchdowns, one pick so far. Indiana can throw the football around. Just don't think they can defend Oregon, who may have the top pick overall in the draft next year. Dante Moore is a good player. He's a transfer from UCLA. He spent a year at Oregon just sitting. He sat behind Dylan Gabriel last year, and it's done him some good. They played Penn State earlier in the season. That game they controlled until the fourth quarter and went to overtime. He's played well. He knew that he wasn't ready to be a guy after starting as a true freshman at UCLA, and now he's surrounded by a really talented team and a head coach who's really motivated to wash away what happened in the Rose Bowl last year, where Ohio State just took them apart. Oregon was the Big Ten champion. They had the bye. Ohio State played Tennessee the week before, and Ohio State made Oregon look like they didn't belong on the same field. So that's some of the motivation for Oregon as they try to get back into the playoffs. So you got a good weekend in the pros and in college. And I think that Oregon Indiana game, yes, at 2:30 on CBS. It's CBS's big game of the weekend. I don't know if I like Indiana's chances there. I don't think they can cover Oregon, but we'll see. In the biggest game, at least rankings wise, of the weekend. All right, we'll go to break with that. You want to chime in? 713-780-3776 is the number. We'll get to, if you missed it, we'll refresh you on the Astros news. A lot of changes for that organization as they try to move forward. We'll get back to that when we come back.
97.5.
Push notifications. Look.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
We'll get to the Astros when we start our second hour. We'll go quick here and get out. Want to let you know that we may be on the verge of someone making up a name about another golden generation of U.S. soccer. Because while the senior team is getting together for a couple of friendlies, the under 20 team is currently in the under 20 World Cup and just beat Italy to get to a quarterfinal. The U.S. under 20 team, and of course because of the age, it's different players every World Cup. They've been pretty good. They at least they win knockout round games, unlike our senior team in the World Cup. So. They beat Italy 3-0 yesterday, so they move into the quarterfinal. And there's a chance it would be a dream for CONCACAF, maybe not for the rest of the world. There's a chance they play Mexico in a final. That's two wins away for each team. But the bracket is set up where if the U.S. and Mexico continue to advance, they would see each other in a under 20 World Cup final. So that's good to see the young guys. And look, it's unlikely that Pochettino would pull anyone from this squad to play in the World Cup just because of their youth. I don't think that we have one of those generational talents. Because if we did, he wouldn't be playing on the under 20 team. But it's good to know that at least the generation that may be playing in the 2030 World Cup can have some success. And the U.S. has the top scorer in the competition. Benjamin Kromaski, who I think at one point, I don't know if he still does. Yeah, he played for Inter Miami. He does play for Inter Miami, or he did, and now he's a midfielder in Serie A. He's on loan from Inter Miami, and he was a guy who had dual national. He's a dual national. He could have played for Argentina. I don't know how that played out, if Argentina didn't select him or not, or I can't speak to that. But I know he may have been able to play for Argentina if they called him up, but the U.S. certainly got a hold of him first. He also could play for Italy, just the how soccer is right now, as far as guys having the ability to play for, in some cases, three different countries. But he plays for us right now. That doesn't keep him from going someplace else. That's just how U-Soccer works, or at least the teams in under 20 teams and below work. He could play for them and then wind up on the Argentinian senior team if they decide they'd like him and he wants to play for them. But right now, he's a U.S. player, and the leading goal scorer in the under 20 World Cup, the under 20 World Cup. So that's something to pay attention to if you want to divert your attention from the football weekend or maybe the baseball playoffs. We got a team that's on the verge of something special. So that's pretty cool. All right, we will go to break with that. We'll be back with some Astro stuff when we come back. The number is 713-780-3776. We're here at East River 9 till noon. You guys should come out here anytime, whether it's today or tomorrow. In fact, I see a couple of our listeners out on the driving range right now. They're just hitting balls with us. Sam, who you know as our social media, I don't know her official title, but let's just say social media manager. And also Courtney, who runs our promo stuff. So they're out there. You guys can join them as well. You heard John talk about it. It's quick. You want to get in 2 hours within of using your clubs, hitting it around. You can come out here. We've got great views of the city. And if it's not golf and you want to play pickleball, they got courts out here for you. And certainly they have the bar that I'm in right now if you want something good to eat. So East River 9 is a place to be. And if you have and they've got corporate memberships as well. So you can take advantage of those. And of course, they've got entertainment. They got bands that they have playing live. So they do a lot here. And you should take advantage of it if you get the chance. All right, we'll be back with hour two when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.